G'day, g'day, g'day. Welcome back to English History Fact and Fiction, episode the 162nd. My name's Dick Newman. This week it's Cromwell Goes Down. Sad, but let's get on with it. Yeah, 1972, status quo, down, down, which is where our Tom is headed. Last week we got to meet Anne of Cleves, who may not have been as pretty as a picture. Plus we got lots of mentions that her personal hygiene wasn't up to scratch. Mind you, Henry's gammy leg is on the nose too. Henry did not like her one little bit and can't get it up for her. Can't get a spare air without getting a stiffy first. Frankie Big Nose and Super Saucy Chuck have fallen out again, so our desire for an alliance with Cleves has pretty much gone. Worse is that Chuck is threatening Cleves, so they might call on our brave soldiers to go and fight a stupid foreign war for them. We don't like that idea at all. Cromwell is under attack by the conservative faction, and just when it looked like he was a goner, he came up with a nice plan to make Henry richer, and scored an earldom as thanks. Things are looking pretty good from Tom's viewpoint, but Duke of Norfolk Tom Howard has brought out his secret weapon, teenager Catherine Howard, and Henry, the old fart, likes the look of this girl. Now, publicly, everything looks great with Henry and Anne of Cleves. Anne was being shown off, and she seriously thought she'd be getting a silly hat any day now. Any close observers, though, would notice that Henry is slipping away more and more, crossing the Thames to the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk's house in Lambeth, or going to Winchester Palace in Suffolk, where Gardener Boo Hiss was providing feasts and entertainments. And those are the two places we would find young Catherine Howard. Tom Howard and Edward Seymour will ramp up their attacks on Tom Cromwell. They'll raise a rumour that Tom had been paid by Wilhelm, Duke of Cleves, to get his sister married to Henry. Having created the rumour, they will report it to Henry. Oh, and by the way, Henry, have you noticed how many servants Cromwell has? He's got way more than any of us. There's about 7,000 of the buggers. Now, you and I, my dear listener, know that Tom Cromwell does not have 7,000 servants, but these guys are saying they're all over the country wearing Cromwell livery. He's building a secret army. And Henry, 40 guys in your private guard are actually Tom's men, and in your chamber there's 5 more who are Cromwell's men. Oh, fucks, is Henry a secret army, eh? Thanks for the tip, and I promise that I will find a way to take away his power. Rumours, as you know, will spread, and before you know it, the gossip is out that Cromwell intends to make himself king. An unnamed gentleman will report that he'd had dinner with Cromwell and Chapuis, and Tom had said, I hope to be king myself one day. Yeah, an unnamed gentleman, really? Get your sources right. Norfolk and Seymour will be straight off to Henry to report this. And we will say, oh, I'm not surprised. I may inform you that I greatly suspect him of a design to raise the kingdom in rebellion and murder me. Only a few days ago he had the effrontery to ask me if he could marry Lady formerly Princess Mary. Now that's according to the Spaniards, who are most likely ramping shit up. But the latest rumour is again that Cromwell wants to marry Mary. And that's not good for Tom. June 1540, tensions are running high. Frenchies report things are brought to such a pass that either Cromwell's party or that of the Bishop of Winchester, that's Gardiner Boo Hiss, must succumb. The Frenchie has his money on Tom Cromwell to win. Although both are in great authority and favour the king their master, still the course of things seems to incline to Cromwell's side. Still, this guy isn't stupid. He'll also report that the English are great at the flip-flopping, so who the fuck knows what will happen. He can also tell us that the English, and in particular the clergy, are pretty unhappy with things generally, and Tom in particular. You can get arrested for being too popish or too reformist. It would be nice if Henry could set out some clear instructions on how to do the churchy stuff without getting yourself in the slammer. There's a parliament coming up, and our Frenchie reckons they should really focus on getting their shit sorted out so people know where they stand. 10th of June, 1540, and Tom will be a bit late for a meeting of the Privy Council scheduled for 3 p.m. In comes Tom.
Gentlemen, I call this council meeting to order.
Cromwell, do not sit there. That is no place for you. Traitors do not sit among gentlemen.
My Lord Cromwell, you are arrested for treason.
Traitor. I ask you on your consciences, am I a traitor?
Yes!
Traitor! Traitor!
Yeah, Tom's been arrested, but the charge was actually both treason and heresy. Cromwell, in a rage, cast his bonnet on the ground, saying to the Duke of Norfolk and others of the Privy Council assembled there that this was the reward for his services and that he appealed to their consciences as to whether he was a traitor. But since he was treated thus, he renounced all pardon, as he had never thought to have offended, and only asked the king not to make him languish long. Thereupon some said he was a traitor, others said he should be judged according to the laws he had made, which were so sanguinary that often words spoken inadvertently and with good intention had been constituted high treason. Yeah, that stuff that Tom's done in the past to stitch up other people is really coming back to bite him on the bum. You can say all sorts of things and people will just twist that and you're gone. Tom Howard, Duke of Norfolk, will step forward and rip the Order of St. George thingy from Tom's neck. William Fitzwilliam, who had already been straying to the Conservative side, will now go full Team Howard and Gardner Boohis. He will untie the Gardenite garter thingy from Tom's leg. Off he goes in, by barge, for a short trip to the Tower, and into the care of Sir William Kingston, who had seen them all, Wolsey, Anne Boleyn, George Boleyn, all the rest. That afternoon, Lord Audley will be given the job of announcing the arrest to the House of Lords. What, they say? He was made an earl 2 weeks ago. Fuck, if it can happen to Tom, it can happen to any of us. And it's a shit sandwich without bread for Tom, who, with that promotion and some victories over Howard and Gardner Boohis, and Lord Lyle going to the slammer just 3 weeks ago, thought he was still on his winning streak. Well, that's Henry for you. Now, Gregory Comrall, his son, was in the House of Commons at the time, so he would have gotten the news pretty fast, and must be wondering if the hard men will be coming for him too. Gregory is now back to being Mr. Cromwell instead of Lord Cromwell, and all of Tom's lands and possessions are forfeit pretty much immediately, including the house that Gregory's living in. Don't panic. Gregory's got his own stuff. He's okay for now. No, he's okay. He's okay. May have been a good move for him to marry a Seymour. In fact, while Tom's in the slammer, Henry will pass some of Tom's stuff and titles on to Gregory. That was designed to help Tom make a nice speech about what a great guy Henry is at the execution. Tom might know then that Henry's not really thinking about a trial, he's just thinking about an execution. Men have been dispatched to seize Tom's house at Austin Friars and search for evidence. The neighbours will see them and the news will spread all over London. The Frenchy ambassador will have the news within an hour. Thomas Cranbell, Keeper of the Privy Seal and Vicar General of the Spirituality, who, since the Cardinal's death, had the principal management of affairs of the kingdom, and has been newly made Grand Chamberlain, was, an hour ago, led prisoner to the Tower and all his goods attached. Not sure if I mention it, but our olden days types weren't all that attached to the correct spelling of their name and could use a few variations, so, you know, Cromwell, Cromwell, Cranville in this case. And that can make it a bit hard for people looking to trace ancestors. Cromwell's stuff will be listed on an inventory. £7,000 in cash. Say a couple of million pounds today. Yeah, a couple of million pounds worth sitting around his house. Plus, of course, lots of churchy stuff. Off it all goes to the King's Treasury, and that's a pretty good indicator that Tom will only come out of the tower to die. We also find several letters to bloody German Lutherans. Oh dear. Henry will read those and be very annoyed. "Never mention his name again," says Henry, "and I want his memory abolished as the greatest wretch in all England." There will be another couple of reports that the search also turned up evidence that Anne of Cleves had been engaged to some German duke, and that Thomas Cromwell, yeah, that's the other variation of his name, had kept it from Henry. That's enough for a guilty verdict on that, but the charge won't be laid, so we might toss that out with the gossip magazines. Besides, the main source for this was the Venetian ambassador, who is also reporting that Henry has Catherine Howard up the spout, which he hasn't. He's probably given it his best shot, but she's not up the spout. Henry has, though, made up his mind about Tom. All property that he had since 1538 will go to the crown. Worse, of course. According to the French ambassador, "To commence, this king distributed all his offices and proclaimed that none should call him Lord Privy Seal or by any other title of estate, but only Thomas Cromwell, Shearman, depriving him of all privileges and prerogatives, and distributing his less valuable movables among his, Cromwell's, servants, who were enjoined no longer to wear their master's livery." Here Henry instructed his hard men not to harm Tom's servants, and they got to keep their own stuff, plus a few trinkets. That's not bad, you know, that's not bad for the times. He also commanded his gentlemen to give these guys jobs and took some of them into his own service. So Gregory Cromwell has come out okay, as have Tom's servants. Henry will also send money to Tom for food and comfort. Now that's how it worked. No free feeds for prisoners, and Tom's now broke because Henry's taken all his stuff. And it will be kind letters from Henry. Really, this guy's hard to figure out. Anne Boleyn hadn't got any kind letters, so Tom has some reason to hope. And Cromwell, of course, has some sympathisers. John Fox will report that it's a class war. Yeah, well spotted there, John Fox. Nobles bringing common smelly Tom down for being common and smelly. But nobles both in England and overseas had disdain for this low-born heretic. The Frenchy ambassador will even apologise to Frankie Bignose for wasting his time reporting on the fate of a common smelly type. Although this might be thought a private matter and of little importance, inasmuch as they have only reduced thus a personage to the state from which they raised him, and treat him as hitherto everyone said he deserved, yet considering that public affairs thereby entirely changed their course, especially as regards to the innovations in religion of which Cromwell was the principal author, the news seemed of such importance that it ought to be written forthwith. Yeah, Tom's just a common smelly type, so who cares about him? He got raised above his station, so he's only getting what he deserves. The Venetian ambassador will be a bit sarcastic, saying Tom will make the same end as all the others who were most high in favour with the king. The official report got to the ambassadors pretty fast. Henry wanted the word out that he's disassociated himself from the architect of English reform. Yes, our glorious leader wants to bring back religion to the way of the truth, but not the Pope. And as if, anyway. The new narrative was Tom alone who was pushing for the Luther stuff in England, with brave Henry fighting back. And Henry had to strike now because Tom was going to use the Parliament to get Lutherism into England, even if he had to take up arms to get it done. We'll send a letter to our ambassador in France so he knows the official line. Henry had put great trust in Cromwell, but Cromwell had not only of his sensual appetite wrought clean contrary to this his grace's most godly intent, secretly and indirectly advancing those of the extremes and leaving the mean indifferent, true and virtuous way, which his majesty sought and so entirely desired, but has also showed himself so fervently bent to the maintenance of that his outrage, that he hath not spared most privily, most traitorously, to devise how to continue the same, and plainly in terms to say, as it has been justified to his face by good witness, that if the king and all of his realm would turn and vary from his opinions, he would fight in the field in his own person, with his sword in his hand against him and all other. Oh, my dear, we're progressing on from that Middle English into the Shakespearean type language, but won't it be good when they invent punctuation? Yes, so Tom wanted to entirely dominate the country, is what Henry's saying. That looks like, actually, the writing of Tom Howard, Duke of Norfolk. Tom will move fast, looking to create a watertight case against Cromwell. Otherwise, Henry might change his mind. Fortunately for Tom Cromwell, Henry will order no torture to be used. Henry had also said that Tom was permitted to write to him, and it will be a four-page letter. Most gracious king and most merciful sovereign, that's how it starts. Perhaps a bit too little, Tom, who will describe himself as your most humble and obedient and most bounden subject and most lamentable servant and prisoner prostrate at the feet of your most excellent majesty. Yeah, that's better. Let's remember that Tom was a lawyer, so he's going to set out a lawyer's argument. I have been accused by your majesty of treason. To that I say I never in all my life thought willingly to do that thing that might or should displease your majesty, and much less do or say that thing which of itself is so high an abominable offence, as God knows, who I doubt not shall reveal the truth to your highness. For as I have ever had love to your honour and person, life, prosperity, health, wealth, and joy, and comfort, and also your most dear and beloved son, the Prince's Grace, and your proceedings, so God help me in this my adversity, and confound me if I ever thought to the contrary. Yeah, pretty good there. Tom is distinguishing between Magnificent Henry and those evil advisers with their filthy accusations. Then it's a handy reminder to Henry of all the stuff that Tom's done for him. I made you super rich, Henry. Then it's, should I now, for such exceeding goodness, be your traitor? No, it's still tricky. It's not like our modern days where you get told what the charges are. Well, in first world countries, USA 2020 accepted. Tom is in the dark about the specific charges, which makes writing this letter a bit tricky. Tom can only speculate while his enemies are convincing the king of his wrongdoings. Tom thinks that it's Audley who's working away at him, so Tom will remind Henry that he, Henry, had frequently warned Tom about Audley's intrigues. And so it'll be, I'm sorry I didn't listen to you. But he was always good to me. But I wish I would have obeyed you in this, and now I'm paying the price. Nice hit there, Tom. Tom had also heard the rumour about himself, about all the retainers, so he'll say he had never retained anyone other than household servants, and the only other people in his house were his friends, guys like Ralph Sadler. And there's always a big bunch of kiddies in the place. Kiddies are my friends. Finally, it's the catch-all. Tom may have accidentally kicked Henry in the nuts without noticing it himself. Sir, I do acknowledge myself to have been a most miserable and wretched sinner, and that I have not towards God and yourself behaved myself as I ought and should have done. For all the offences to God while I live, I shall continually call for his mercy, and for my offences to your grace, which God knows were never malicious or wilful, and I never thought treason to your highness, your realm or posterity, so help me in either in word or deed, nevertheless prostrate at your majesty's feet, what thing soever I have offended, and I appeal to your highness for mercy, grace, and pardon. Your sorrowful subject and most humble servant and prisoner, this Saturday at your Tower of London, Thomas Cromwell. Yeah, Henry won't reply. Frankie Big Nose, though, will reply to his ambassador, say the news he got has been to me not only agreeable, but such as, for the perfect amity I have always borne towards my good brother, I have thanked God, praying you to present him the letters of credence I have written to you, and tell him from me that he has occasion to thank God for having let him know all the faults and malversations of such an unhappy person as Cromwell, who alone has been the cause of all the suspicions conceived against not only his friends, but his best servants. He shall know how much the getting rid of this wicked and unhappy instrument will tranquillise his kingdom to the common welfare of the church, the nobles, and the people. Now, my dear listener, I'm sure you are one smart cookie, unlike our apes, Henry. When your enemy writes a bullshitty like that, saying bringing down your top guy is a great move, you may want to think, really? You think Cromwell going is a good thing? But Henry isn't that smart, so he's thinking, great, now I can be BFFs with Big Nose again. Frankie also told his ambassador, keep into Henry to get Cromwell dead in case Henry changes his mind. See, even the Frenchies know that Henry's a flip-flopper. Frankie will also write to Henry directly saying, Norfolk will be able to remember what I said to him when he was in France. Yeah, what Frankie and Norfolk had discussed was getting rid of Cromwell. In fact, Tom Howard had been discussing Cromwell all over Europe, getting the nobility on the side for Cromwell's downfall. And of course, that's easy to do. It doesn't matter where you're a noble, you don't like seeing common smelly types getting raised up. On the day of the arrest, Howard had written to our German ambassador with the information to be relayed onto Super Sausage Chuck. Chuck, a man of few words, will say, what? Is he in the Tower of London at the King's command? Yep, says the ambassador, and Chuck will say no more. How enigmatic. If I'm silent, then I'm not real. If I speak up, then no one will hear. If I wear a mask, then somewhere to hide. Silence is golden. I have been broken. Saving my own skin, so nobody wins.
You're just a bit of garbage there. Great band.
Tom Howard and his mates are also busy pulling apart Cromwell's foreign policy. Fuck the Schmalkaldic League of Justice, we want to be mates with Super Sausage and Big Nose. There is still the problem of Anne of Cleves and a brother Duke Wilhelm who wants a hand against Chuck. Henry will ask Big Nose to do him a solid favour and go and help Wilhelm. Big Nose will say, yeah, sure, mate, I'll make an alliance with Duke Wilhelm. On the plus side, with Cromwell out of court, all the boys are getting along splendidly well. Come on, admit it, you believe me there for a minute. Of course it's not going splendidly well. It's fucked. It's still conservatives versus reformers, with each side out to get the other. When Tom was there, it was basically Tom versus Norfolk and Gardner boo-hiss. Now without him, it's a bit more like a brawl. Archie Tom Cramer will write a similar letter that he had for Anne Boleyn. Can't believe that Tom's a traitor. I love the guy as a friend, and loved him all the more because he loved you, Henry. Yeah, great, Archie. Thanks. But then Cramer is glad that Cromwell's treason has been discovered, and it's all very sorrowful because if Cromwell is a traitor, then who can the king trust? Still, I shall pray to the toppest of all top dogs to send you a counsellor you can trust and who is as good as Tom Cromwell. Yeah, it will have about the same effect on Henry as did the Archie's letter about Anne Boleyn. That is, zero. I stuck up for Cramer last time, and I will again. Rumours are out that he will soon join Cromwell in the Tower, and with the brawling going on at court, that's a very real possibility. Time to toss Cromwell under the bus and save yourself. And hey, he's the only one of Tom Cromwell's mob who did actually manage to write to Henry. It's that tough time. Do you go into bat for Cromwell, which may be very dangerous, or do you condemn him, as Cramer did, to look after your own safety? Or do you just stay the fuck out of it? Gregory Cromwell will be persuaded by his missus, the Seymour one, to keep the fuck out of it. His cousin Richard Cromwell and Cromwell's top servant Ralph Sadler, though, are both stars at court, and they'll be fiercely loyal to old Tom. While they aren't writing to Henry, they are talking Cromwell up at court. Now, still front page news around the world. The Constable of Calais will throw a party. Frankie Big Nose now has it as a genuine miracle from God. Our Frenchy ambassador has tons of Frenchy courtiers pressing him for news. They're all happy as King Donald seeing himself on Fox News and asking, is he dead yet? Is he dead yet? Suddenly Frenchy types are saying, yeah, when you Cromwell was looking to make himself King of England, everybody knows it. And the Portuguese are now gossiping that Tom wanted to marry Lady formerly Princess Mary. And now that's caught on in France. And Big Nose knew that Henry would make Cromwell an earl or a duke and marry off Mary to him. Then Cromwell would take over the place. And that's why every time Henry tried to marry Mary off, Cromwell would get in and stuff the plan up. Henry, of course, will use all this to build a case against Tom, and he needs it because, just like Anne Boleyn, he doesn't actually have much of a case. In come the interrogators led by, oh no, Tom Howard, Duke of Norfolk. Yeah, he shouldn't be too biased, should he? Cromwell, you may as well blame yourself and your pride for bringing you to this pass. Now, just to balance the scales, we've also got Ted Seymour. I'm kidding. It's Tom's two biggest enemies. Ted Seymour will kick off. Say, Cromwell, was it not enough for you, a blacksmith's son, to have risen to lord it over the whole realm and have us all do your bidding? Okay, says Tom, enough with the bullshit. What are the charges? Now, Tom would know that the case is going to be flimsy, and our guys aren't going to lay out specific charges, but this is Tom, so he will say that he's always been pursued by great enemies about the king, so that his fidelity was tried like gold. Yeah, that's letting them know that he may actually have the goods on them, and they may exchange places. Tom and Ted will then relent and give him the charges. Charge number one. The devil must have put it into your head and given you such impudence as to presume to as the king for the hand of his daughter. Yeah, that was so you could take over the place and make yourself king. You said that at the Chapuis dinner party. And besides, what have you done to make you think that Chuck would make you king? Yes, and once you married Mary, you were going to murder Henry. Yeah, that's sort of like a crime that hasn't actually happened, has it? But it's kind of a catch-all. On then to more specific issues, and the biggie will be the marriage to Anne of Cleves. That line of questioning will disintegrate with the interrogators getting all yelly and nasty. Cromwell will say, if I had carried out into effect what I intended once, you would not be ill-treating me now. Do not take the trouble, my lords, to find out any more. It is my own fault for not revenging myself upon some of you. Let the king do as he likes with me, for I deserve to die. My only sorrow is that I did not see the death of some of you first. Now that will calm the fuckers down a bit. Tom will go on to refute all the trumped-up charges. Henry will get impatient. Time for some psychological torture. Listen, Tom, a nice confession will get you the axe. No confession, and it will be a good burning for heresy. There are other thoughts that the only reason Henry had given Cromwell his earldom was to make people think that Tom must have been guilty of really bad stuff now to be in the slammer. Okay, let's get the Bill of Attainder into the House of Lords. Pretty long document, 11 charges on several pages. Principal charge will be religious treason. Tom's a detestable heretic who tried to get the filthy Lutheranism into England against the king's wishes. He had circulated filthy reformist literature that denied the magic trick of turning bread into baby Jesus. That makes him guilty of being a sacramentary, which is punishable by death with zero hope of a pardon. This base-born commoner made himself more powerful than the king. That's high treason, and it's actually also impossible. Still, high treason, sentence death. He usurped the king's power without consent. He also said stuff to Henry like, if I were sure of you, that's a detestable way to speak to the king, and treason. Cromwell supported the heretical preacher Robert Barnes. That's heresy. He said that if Henry turned from Reformation, he would not, and in need he would take up arms against the king. He said, if I live one or two more years, it won't be in the king's power to stop me. Now, we don't know if Tom said that or not, but that, of course, certainly would be treason. But it had allegedly been said a year earlier, and somehow remained unreported, so I think we can call bullshit on it. On and on it goes, freeing people suspected of treason, sold export licences, granted passports, and drawn up commissions without Henry's knowledge. Incited Anne of Cleves to win Henry over, and, oh, are we implying Cromwell said that Henry had a limp dick? We'll tack on the charge that Tom was trying to marry Mary. Zero corroborating evidence, but it's a witch hunt, so you throw everything in. The thing will conclude with perhaps the real problem. Tom has made himself terribly wealthy and has a disdain for the nobility. Yeah, I think you and I can toss out everything else and say, there lies Tom's problem. Tom's back in the headlines. We're all excited, particularly the Frenchy ambassador. Nothing else is spoken of here, and in a week, at latest, the said prisoner is expected to be executed and treated as he deserves. Tom's been stripped of all his titles and is back to a commoner, so it'll be either a burning as a heretic or hung, drawn and quartered for treason. The ambassador has also told the Frenchies that Tom will be done immediately after Parliament closes. The Bill of Attainder will be passed. That's it. Tom's done it himself plenty of times. Got Margaret Pole's head off that way, for an example. And let's not forget that Bill of Attainder makes you legally dead, and your forever death will be hot on its heels. So now Tom's going to be the victim himself. The world's most notorious lawyer has been condemned without trial. But Henry is not yet finished with Tom. Desperately trying to get out of his marriage with Anna Cleve so he can get on to tasty Catherine Howard, Henry is gathering evidence that he hadn't banged Anne. Tom Risley will confirm that Henry had been so revolted by his new bride that he had been unable to perform the usual act of a husband. Yes, he's only a limp dick with Anne of Cleves. I guess that's a bit different, isn't it? But Henry wants the architect of the marriage to testify, Tom Cromwell. Henry will give clear instructions. As Cromwell is about to die, he will not damn his soul, but declare what the king had said not only at the time, but continually until the day of marriage and many times after, whereby his lack of consent will appear, and also the lack of will and power to consummate the same, wherein both he, our physicians, the Lord Privy Seal that is now, Hennage and Denny can and we doubt not will testify according to the truth, which is that we never for love of the woman consented to marry, nor yet, if she bought maidenhead with her, took any from her by true carnal copulation. Holy fuck, what a sentence. Cromwell will take the opportunity to give Henry what he wants to make a final plea for clemency. He's writing for his life. The thing will run to 8 pages, and we can see that he'd made plenty of drafts with lots of crossings out. The smartest guy around is thinking really hard on this. Lots of grovelling, of course, except that justice has been done with the Bill of Attainder. I'm sure the Lord's acted without malice. Yeah, right. I'm much grieved at being accused of treachery, but realise the futility of complaining about my rivals, and instead chose to assure you, my king, of my unfailing loyalty and devotion. You know how dear I hold you, and I keep your laws in my heart. Now, Cromwell's critics will get stuck into him for that, because they're going to say he said he loved Henry more than he loved God. Oh, naughty Tom. Then it's on to the begging for mercy. Overall, it's a pretty standard letter from the condemned to a king, but then he'll turn his attention to his son Gregory, as a dad should. Sir, upon my knees, I most humbly beseech your gracious majesty to be a good and gracious lord to my poor son, the good and virtuous lady, his wife, and their poor children. And this I desire of your grace for Christ's sake. Then it's on to the tricky bit, the Anna Cleves thing. If Tom says I fucked up and forced you into the marriage, then he's condemning himself. And sure, he's already condemned, but you don't want to make it worse for yourself. But he's got to help Henry here. Here's his words on the first meeting of Henry and Anne at Rochester. I spoke with your grace and demanded of you how you liked the lady. Your grace being somewhat heavy, as I took it, answered, and said she was no such manner of woman as she had been declared to you, with many other things which surely much grieved me, for I perceived your grace to be nothing content. Nevertheless, your highness determined for the meeting the next day to be had, as it was appointed, and after which meeting and your entry made, your grace called me unto you, asking me whether your grace had told me the truth or no, to which I said little, for I was very sorrowful to consider that your grace was no better content. Yeah, it's a pretty good start then. He'll then hint that the Cleves mob deliberately withheld the documents on Anne's previous betrayal to the Lorraine guy. He'll also repeat that Henry had told him he thought Anne was no virgin, and that, as a result, Henry's heart could not consent to meddle with her carnally. Nice turn of phrase, meddle with her carnally. Tom's done this without mentioning Henry's limp dick. Nice touch there. And to finish, I never saw your grace happy after you had seen her. Then another plea for mercy, and we can see that Tom was a very worried man. He will end, your most heavy and most miserable prisoner and poor slave, Thomas Cromwell. Then add a postscript. Most gracious prince, I cry for mercy, mercy, mercy. Henry will, at least, ask for the letter to be read 3 times. Was he moved by the cries of mercy? Or did he just want to be sure that Tom gave him what he needed? Yeah, the only answer Tom will get from Henry is nothing. 20th of June, and Anne will complain to the Cleves ambassadors about floozy Catherine Howard hanging around. 22nd of June, and Anne will be all happy again because Henry has spoken kindly to her. 24th of June, Anne Eccles will get orders from the council to leave court and go to Richmond Palace. She'll tell the ambassador that she thinks she's going to get the same treatment as Catherine of Aragon. Money taken away bit by bit, worse and worse accommodation. 6th of July, and Anne will get the message. Henry wants to end the marriage. The Cleves ambassador will meet with the council and find they're united and the writing's on the wall. Anne, though, will not be doing a Catherine and fighting Henry. He's the all-powerful king. Henry's lawyers will press on with the she was engaged thing, and Henry had, for that reason only, been unable to consummate the marriage. Yeah, Henry won't be going public with the limp dick thing. He's a big manly man. Let's have an ecclesiastical inquiry, and here's Charles Brandon back after a long absence in our story. Oh, I guess he's just been bagging Catherine Willoughby and getting cash from the dissolution of the monasteries. He'll be back in the tale. Anyway, Duke of Suffolk, Charles Brandon, William Fitzwilliam and Tom Risley have been delegated to visit Anne and get her consent for the inquiry. Anne will faint. She'll recover, then refuse to cooperate. The girl has to save some face, but she doesn't seem to be fighting to save a marriage. Still, the delegation will report back to Henry that Anne was pretty cool with the ending of the marriage thing. 3 days later, done and dusted. Marriage was illegal. In comes the Cleves ambassador saying, fuck, 3 days, are you kidding me? And why wasn't I called to the thing? Nothing to do with you, mate. It's churchy stuff and the churchy guys have reached a decision. We've got guys on their way to tell Anne the news. Off goes the ambassador on a super fast horsey. Way faster than the delegation, and he'll find Anne all boo-hoo-hooing. She'd already had a letter from Henry saying, you need to sign the divorce papers. Yes, the reality is set in for Anne, and she doesn't know how to reply. In comes Thomas Manners, Earl of Rutland, saying, there, there. Henry is a good and gracious king, and will proceed by the law and by his good conscience. You've got nothing to fear. Anne will say, sure, but I'm not signing nothing. In comes the delegation and Anne is smart enough to say, okay, look, I'll hear what you've got to say. What we have, they say, is good news. We've got a deal on the offer. You agree to stop being Henry's missus and he'll agree that you are his sister. And hey, a king's sister gets looked after pretty well. What's Anne thinking, I wonder? If it was me, I might be thinking, yeah, well, Catherine of Aragon was his sister at the start, wasn't she, according to the baby Jesus rules. Then she became his missus. Then, according to baby Jesus, after the divorce, she went back to being his sister, and he treated her rather badly. On the other hand, Catherine's problem was that she wouldn't acknowledge Henry as the head of the church in England. So there you go. Anne has already acknowledged Henry as the head of the church, so she might do all right out of this. And the alternative might be an Anne Boleyn-style stitch-up and execution. Unlikely, because Anne of Cleves is a foreigner, and you don't want to upset the foreigners. Anne consented to the decree and wrote a formal letter of submission to Henry. Though this case must needs be most hard and sorrowful unto me, for the great love which I bear your most noble person, yet having more regard to God and his truth than to any worldly affection, I acknowledge myself hereby to accept and approve the same. And sure, we never banged. My body remains intact and with the integrity which I brought into this realm. Signed, your Majesty's most humble servant and sister, Anne, Doctor of the Clefts. Parliament will then confirm that the marriage was invalid. So easy when you're king and the head of the church. Thanks, Pink. And believe it or believe it, Anne will do well. Henry will write back, dear sister, etc., etc., £4,000 a year. Oh, that's all right, all right. You can have Richmond and Bletchingley nice and close to the court where the welcome mat is out for you. And hey, I'll be popping in from time to time to see how my dear sister's going. marvellous, and a hearty, well done, smelly Anne of Cleves from all of us. The delegation turned up with this letter, and Anne asked Tom Risley to read it. He said, "Hey, kiddo, this is great news, so look, I'll just leave it with you and your interpreter to digest it slowly at your leisure." Okay, she's read it and wants the delegation back in. "Where's this Bletchingly and what servants am I getting?" The guys will do their best to satisfy her and say, "Hey, continue on the path you're on and it will be happily ever after for you." Okay, says Anne, and in the course of the conversation she let slip that the biggest worry she had was being sent back to Germany, where she thought her brother would kill her for failing to be the Queen of England. That then was pretty good motivation for Anne to agree to the divorce. 17th of July, and Anne will agree that she will receive no more correspondence from Germany, and that any letters will go straight to Henry. 21st of July, and she will write to Duke Wilhelm to let her know that she was perfectly satisfied with how things worked out, and after having a nice dinner, will send her wedding ring back to Henry, asking that it be broken into pieces as a thing that had no force or value. And that's that. Nicely done, everyone. Henry's cleared the decks and he's spoiled for choice as to what to do next. Have Cromwell made dead, or get teenage Catherine Howard in the cot, where he's certain the wedding tackle will perform as required. Catherine Howard was pretty much the opposite of Anne of Cleves. English, petite, plump, pretty, and gets all the courtly stuff. She's charming and good-natured and certainly knows how to attract men. But she's going to have to wait a tick, because it'll be Cromwell going first. A date has been set, 28th of July 1540 at Tower Hill. No private affair then, and Tom will have to put up with the mob before his death. Tom's not the only guy to go that day. Lord Hungerford is up for the chop. His missus, you may recall, had appealed to Tom to help her divorce this fucker. So he's been done for harbouring a priest who was tied up with the Pilgrimage of Grace thing, enlisting a cunning man to predict when Henry would die, and just to make sure, we've tossed in the charge of buggery. Still carries the death sentence, but we don't really worry much about it now the monasteries are gone. In fact, we think that Hungerford is the only guy in England to get executed for buggery. Gregory Cromwell had been keeping a low profile, which I'm sure would have pleased Tom. Gregory's missus, Elizabeth Seymour, though, wrote to Henry, "After the bounden duty of my most humble submission unto your excellent majesty, whereas it has pleased the same of your mere mercy and infinite goodness, notwithstanding the heinous trespass and most grievous offences of my father-in-law, yet so graciously to extend your benign pity towards my poor husband and me, as the extreme indignance and poverty wherewith my said father-in-law's most detestable offences has oppressed us, is thereby right much holpen and relieved, like as I have long time been right desirous presently as well to render most humble thanks as also to desire continuance of the same your highness's most benign goodness." Yeah, so we're still not in punctuation, and Elizabeth was happy to toss Tom under a bus. Tom is her good lord and father no more. Now, to be fair, Elizabeth may have been forced to write that by her husband, or even Henry himself. And Tom, as a pragmatist, would probably be pretty cool with the whole thing. 20th of July, and Tom will write his last letter. It's not a boo-hoo-hoo, goodbye cruel world letter at all. Now, Frankie Bignose surely knew that Henry without Cromwell would be weakened, so he kindly chipped in with an accusation regarding the seizure of some stuff from the governor of Picardy's ship. So the council decided to add a last-minute charge against Tom, and Tom's writing in his defence. The day before the execution, Archie Tom Cramer and Ted Seymour will be delegated to see Tom and let him know he's going the next day. Ted Seymour will be nasty, saying, "I'm sure it's God's will that you should live no longer." But Cramer has the happy news, it will be a beheading. No fool hung, drawn and quartered ordeal, or no being set on fire. Tom will be calm during the night. Lord Hungerford will rage around so much that they think he must have gone mad. 28th of July, and we have 1,000 troops out in case of a mob riot. Now, Tom might have been hated outside of London, but in London he was loved. And we do know he had quite a few servants who could have raised a mob. Off he goes to the scaffold.
good people. I've come here to die. I'm not to purge myself as some may think I should. I am by law condemned to die, and I thank my Lord God that has granted me this death for my offense. For since I came of age, I have lived as a sinner and offended my Lord God, for which I ask him heartily for forgiveness.
Get it over with, for Christ's sake, get it over with!
I have also offended my prince, for which I ask him hearty amnesty.
Yeah, a bit more bullshit there from the TV series The Tudors. Perhaps they were trying to represent the mob of England rather than the mob of London, because the mob of London weren't all hating on Tom Cromwell. He'd been good to him. Tom White, our poet and diplomat, was seen to be going for the tissues while he was there. Tom Cromwell will say, "Oh, White, do not weep, for if I were no more guilty than you were when they took you, I wouldn't be here." We take that to mean Tom was admitting his guilt to what we may see as his political crimes. Here we go then, I'll try to do justice, Tom. Gentlemen, you should all take a warning from me, who was, as you know, from a poor man, made by the king into a great gentleman. And I, not contented with that, nor having the kingdom at my orders, presumed to still a higher state, and my pride has brought its punishment. I confess I am justly condemned, and I urge you, gentlemen, to study the preserve of the good you possess, and never let greed or pride prevail in you. Serve your king, who is one of the best in the world, and one who knows best how to reward his vassals. Yeah, so there's a bit of a warning in that. You too could find yourself right where I am. He'll then go on in the usual manner. I'm come here to die, and not to purge myself, etc., etc. I am by the law condemned to die, and thank my Lord God who has appointed me this death, and so on. I have lived as a sinner and offended my Lord God, yada blah, yada blah. Ask for forgiveness, of course, long live the king and the mighty Prince Edward to reign after him. Just the normal stuff you get at these things. Then it will be a quick bio, emphasising his rise from common poverty, a bit of a nobody, to a traveller of the world, then onwards and upwards. On to religion, where he states he is a good Catholic with no heresy. Now that might have been forced on Tom, but we'll never know. Still, some of the words he used, like not doubting any article of my faith, that might refer to his legislation, indicates that perhaps he was letting us know he was still good with the reformist ideas. All in all, this is a very good speech. There's nothing in it for Henry to criticise, nor does Tom look like a hypocrite. And once again, always remember that these guys at the end, they've got to make a speech that says Henry's great, otherwise he might come after your family. Then it's a final prayer out loud, which was recorded, but it's doubtful because this one doesn't really sound like Tom at all. Time to ask the executioner for a solid favour. Try to get it in one, mate, thanks. Yeah, this won't be going well. Now, as usual, we've got a range of stories for you to pick from. The happiest end, we've got three whacks with the axe. That's not too bad. On the unhappiest end, we get the story that the Conservatives, and Tom Howard in particular, made sure that Tom got an inexperienced executioner, and that Tom Howard had got this guy well and truly pissed the night before. In the most extreme version then, we have it taking half an hour for this dickwit to get Tom's head off. I don't particularly like that one, because half an hour the mob would have got well and truly over it, and that executioner might have gone down himself at the hands of the mob. Now Tom's head, along with Lord Hungerford's, will go onto London Bridge. His head and body will eventually be reunited at that St. Peter ad Vincula in the Tower. Tom won't get any nice obituaries. The Spanish rape thus ended the life of this Cromwell, who had better never have been born. The Catholics in Rome will have a party. Chuck's mob will write that his death may call Henry back to his duty, that is, the Pope. We may get a balance view from Edward Hall. Many lamented, but more rejoiced. And he goes on to tell us churchy types held a big banquet that night. Others who knew him lamented and praised him. Now a ballad to Tom Cromwell will be published, calling him a traitor. Several more ballads will be published along the lines of a ballad against malicious slanderers that are sympathetic to Tom. Now, it looks like that first anti-Tom ballad may have been a government job, whereas the pro-Tom ballads were just by ordinary types. Gregory Cromwell will keep that low profile, while Richard Cromwell will openly lament. Brave move, Richard. Ralph Sadler will also remain loyal to Tom, and fortunately for us, he'll grab that Hans Holbein painting of Tom and hide it away. If he hadn't done that, then Henry would probably have destroyed the thing. Tom White will write a poem. Fair enough, he's a poet. I'm not going to read this one out because I might have you boo-hoo-hooing, and I don't know if it's Tom White's best work. Tom Cromwell once said that what he wanted most was to leave a good name behind. Well, it depends on who you were at the time. For Reg Pohl, Tom was an agent of Satan sent by the devil to lure Henry to damnation. Yeah, I think that's a bit much there, Reg. And Reg will say that Tom did not give a fig about religion. He just wanted to make lots of money and show off that he was very clever. Catholic types over the years will continue to promote that Tom was a very bad boy indeed. It was his fault that Henry wanted a divorce and turned away from the Pope and so on. Future Protestants, though, will be rather kind to Tom, who dedicated himself to the advancement and correct knowledge of the Gospels and reformation of the House of God. 1602 will see a play, The True Chronicle History of the Whole Life and Death of Thomas Cromwell, written by the enigmatic W.S., but only booksellers these days have that as our Bill Shakespeare. The Oxford reference will tell you it's a play published in 1602 and stated in the title to have been written by W.S. It was included in the third and fourth Shakespeare folios, 1664 and 1685. The play has little merit and is certainly not by Shakespeare. They seem to be pretty firm on the matter. Cromwell's reputation then will go pretty well for a few hundred years. Puritans and Enlightenment English will like the lad. 19th century and all that will go. We're getting into the Romantic period in the 19th century and the English Catholics have been copping a hard time for years. We had then something like Catholic Lives Matter type protests and we're all thinking, hey, England was great in the olden days, pre-Reformation. Henry will become a brutal king with his chief minister who was a brutal blacksmith. Cromwell will become one of the top villains in English history. He's a sinister genius. At least they kept up with how smart he was with the genius reference. 20th century and we're calming the fuck down again, and Tom will be back to one of the most remarkable statesmen of the 16th century. Really, one of the most remarkable? Oh, well, I suppose we've got some interesting characters coming up. He instigated and in part accomplished a major and enduring transformation in virtually every aspect of the nation's public life. That's historian Geoffrey Elton. Sadly for Tom, though, that 19th century hatchet job done on his reputation had really got into popular culture with stuff like A Man for All Seasons, which shows our Sir St. Tom Moore as a pure, sweet, kind saint who would never, ever, ever reach for a box of matches. Tom will remain a villain. Most recently, of course, we have the hugely popular Hilary Mantel novels, which were meticulously researched, and that Tom is extremely likable. Fair enough, authors want us to empathise with their main character, and it's hard not to yell at the book when Tom starts talking up Anna Cleves. Don't do it, Tom, we all want to say, we don't want you to die. Hilary was telling Tom's story, so there's no criticism of some stuff Tom did that we might want to frown on. For me, our Tom Cromwell was pretty darn marvellous. A self-made man who had a ton of energy, ability, and of course, a driving ambition. He was totally loyal to Wolsey and then, in turn, to Henry. On the downside, he was ruthless and corrupt. Of course, corruption was way more accepted then than it is now. Although, really now, of course, it still goes on, it's huge. If you're to rise in the court of King Henry VIII, then you better be ruthless and corrupt and have a nice pinch of brutality about you. Cromwell, though, unlike, say, King Donald, was meticulous at staying within the law, and it seems he was very reluctant to send people to their death. Still, if politics required it, then to death you would go. His achievements, though, were remarkable. He had a brilliant mind and transformed England, revolutionising government by introducing a bureaucracy. He sorted Henry's divorce, totally changed religion with the introduction of the English magic book and the removal of monks and, well, most of the nuns. His social reforms improved a lot of smelly types, all this while being a highly successful businessman, improving trade for English merchants and introducing a heap of legislation to sort out previous legislation that had been, you know, a bit messy. Unlike Wolsey, Tom was a big fan of Parliament, which had become, under Tom, a more permanent and powerful institution. Tom had to keep it as Henry's thing, but he set the scene for Parliament to become the ruling institution rather than the kingly rule. Tom's biggest problem was that he worked for a fuckwit. Henry simply wasn't up to the pace of change that Tom wanted. It was Tom's more radical ideas that probably got him the chop. His attack on the conservative nobles also looked stupid, but attack was perhaps the best form of defence at the time. Henry hoped that with Cromwell out, we might get some religious peace. Oh, fuck, Henry. Religious peace? Yeah. So that just looks to me like Henry being stupid. Tom was full on for reformation, but kept it all to just what Henry would allow. He was Henry's best man for the job. Well, that's where we're going to leave it this week. R.I.P. Tom Cromwell, for me, you were one of the best we've had so far. Flashy guitar solos there for Tom Cromwell. Bit of Mazzy Star Into Dust, which is what's happened to Tom, hasn't it? To get us into some historical fiction. And as I suggested last week, I decided to watch the, or re-watch the latest Mary Queen of Scots movie, The Margot Robbie and Sayorsi, I can't pronounce her name. Just to compare it to the earlier, 1967 I think it was, the Linda Jackson movie. So the big difference that you see immediately is the costumes, sets, lighting, that sort of stuff. Way more up-to-date, of course, with the modern one. It's a far more visually appealing movie. The storyline, both movies sort of take liberties with the history, but both of them kind of give you the story anyway of Mary Queen of Scots. I actually preferred the first one for the script. With the first one, Baby Betty is far more stronger and powerful and clever and whatever, which you'd expect in the 60s. That was a time when England were just starting, and I think they're still going through it, they were just starting to get the idea that, yeah, they were no longer a superpower at all. And like all the other developed nations in the West, we all had to obey the USA, support their corporations economically, and support their stupid foreign continuous bloody wars. So, yeah, I think in the 21st century we might have a bit more balanced view of these kings and queens of England and don't make them quite so magnificent. So, at the end of the day, all I can do is recommend both movies to you. Mary Queen of Scots, either the olden days one or the more modern 21st century one. But for us, it's a matter of what we go out with. And, of course, Anne of Cleves has not totally exited our story. She'll be back just as a special guest star, let's say, as a special guest star from time to time. But she's gone as Queen of England, so we'll be going out with Rick Wakeman and Anne of Cleves. Not sure what Wakeman was trying to say with the frantic nature of the track Anne of Cleves. Perhaps he's trying to reflect Henry trying to frantically get out of the marriage. Who knows? Anyway, hope to see you next week. Bye.